A Tuesday morning, as per usual. At this time, we catch up with our IT and gadget guru, Stephen Fenwick, who's on the line. Morning, Stephen.
Morning, Richard. How you doing?
Yeah, good. And yourself?
Well, thank you.
The 3G shutdown, we've been talking about it seemingly forever, ever and a day. It's happening next week, the 28th of this month.
That's right, yeah. You've got 1 week to get your act together.
And I think the figure I saw was something like 60,000 devices are going to be out of action by next week.
The biggest issue here, what's causing the most problems, are people with phones, with 4G phones that don't have the VoLTE, so the voice over LTE calling feature. So a lot of people look at their phone and go, they see 4G on the top there, and they think, oh, I might be right, but it may be that that phone doesn't have that VoLTE feature, and that if they go to ring emergency services after next week, that they're going to be actually not be able to connect. So I think that's the real worry, and it's not just for your own phone. I think make a call to your parents, your grandparents, make sure that they're not the ones within that situation. So what you can do, if you do have a device that you think might not work after next week with for VoLTE, you can text the number 3 to 3498 and you'll get a response, and it'll tell you whether you need to upgrade that device or whether it's fine.
Okay, text the number 3 to 3498 and you get a response pretty well.
You get a response within a second and it'll say, yeah, you're good, or, you know, look, you need to upgrade. So there's still plenty of time. We all know that the other 3G products like vending machines and medical devices, I think they've been sorted. They've been looked after because they're essential. Let's call them essential services that need to run on 4G now. They've been fine. It's just these phones that perhaps could be. They will still make and receive calls, but if it gets down to it and you need to make an emergency call, it's the worst possible time to find out that your phone's not compatible.
You've mentioned the Samsung Galaxy Ring. I believe that's now available in Australia, Stephen?
It is, yeah. It went on sale last Wednesday. It's $699, and it's the Samsung's smallest wearable ever. So you know how we wear smart watches and we get all our information? Well, imagine being able to do nearly all of those things with a ring. So it's discreetly on your ring, on your finger. You need to get the right size though, Richard. It's really important. Anyone considering buying the Samsung ring, make sure they get the right size. If you want to order it online, they'll send you a sizing kit. So you'll get a box with a dummy of every ring, and you're able to then approximate what you can put on the one that you think is your size, wear it for a day or two. If you're happy with that size, then you make the order. You can also go in person to the Samsung Experience stores, do the same thing. It is coming to retail, I understand, so retail will probably carry the most popular sizes. They'll have the sizing kit. If they don't have your size, then you can order it. But it is very important to have the size because those sensors have to make proper contact on your finger to get all the information. And I think it does track your fitness, tracks your health, tracks your exercise, but also tracks your sleep. And there are smartwatches can track sleep too, but I don't like wearing a watch to bed, as would a lot of other customers.
Yeah, yeah.
So the ring is ideal. It really is the easiest way that I've found to track my sleep has been with the ring. I've been tracking my sleep for the past week, and the battery's lasted a week as well. It's been really good. It does come with a charging case as well, so after a few days, you can pop it back in the case just like you do with your earphones. You know, you put them in the case to charge them.
Yep.
Same thing here with the Galaxy Ring. You'll get charged up. Available in 3 colours, titanium silver, titanium black, titanium gold. And it's obviously designed to appeal to men and women. That's why there's those different colours. But it is a pretty neutral sort of design, and would it doesn't look too bad on your hand.
Yeah, all right, interesting. But you don't make phone calls and go online with this.
It doesn't have a screen. It doesn't buzz on your finger or anything like that. So. And that's the reason why I think the battery lasts so long. But it still has all the sensors. It's still got Bluetooth, connects to your phone as well. It can collect up to 6 days of data, and when you come back near your phone, it'll upload it then. So if you're away or something and you don't have your phone next to you all the time, it can store 6 days of data and then uploaded it that once. So,
right.
Pretty good.
Joanne has emailed in, can you ask Stephen about SIM cards in dog tracking collars? Are they likely to be on the 3G network? I heard a comment that some of the security cameras with a SIM card are on the 3G network unless they're quite new.
Yeah, well, the older cameras would be 3G, that take a 3G, but you'd find that they'll be 4G compatible as well. It's just a SIM card that does that. Well, the device as well, if it's 4G compatible, the SIM card, you won't need to change it because the network should be able to handle that changeover.
Yeah.
Dog collars, yeah, they're like any other GPS tracker with a SIM card. Just look in the specs. If it says 3G/4G, then you're good. If it only says 3G, then you've got to get a new one.
Yeah, all right, thanks for that. Look, an article in my local daily, the Newcastle Herald today, the safety proposals come 4 months after the eSafety Commissioner issued notices to digital firms to, under the Online Safety Act, directing the companies to protect children from Class 1C and Class 2C material. I missed the first bit here, which I should have gone to. Australian attempting to access pornographic websites and certain online games are going to be subject to age tests under online safety proposals that could come into effect next year. The draft online safety codes designed to protect children from explicit material could mean messaging services automatically detect and blur nude images and dating services expressly prohibiting sexual extortion attempts. But again, it comes down to this age verification, doesn't it, Stephen?
And it does, but we've had the internet for 30 years. Like, what's taken them so long?
Yes.
In the early days of the internet, we thought, oh, no, under 18, you won't be able to access it. The level of security you're getting now for explicit material, there's a pop-up that goes, are you over 18?
Yes.
It's up to you to click on that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that they've got a lot of work to do to be able to verify people's ages because anyone with access to the internet can access porn. Unless the parents have got filters and supervision, that's the only thing stopping it. There's nothing that the government has done to prevent people accessing this sort of material, and then looking forward to them trying to ban people from social media at a certain age. How are they going to do that? How? They were talking about maybe facial recognition software, but it's going to be tough to enforce this age restriction when it comes into place.
And the other aspect is if they're going to introduce it, a whole lot of questions, it's the privacy issue then of, if you've got to put a whole lot of data in to prove who you are and how old you are, where does all that information go? Again, it's a privacy issue.
Yeah, that's a good point, but I think, being the government, there'd be a level of trust there, I suppose. They're going to store your information in a way, like the government already knows who you are, mate. They've got your passport, your licence, your Medicare card, MyGov, they know who you are and where you live. So privacy is really not the issue. I think, security of the data is the issue, but if they sort of know who we are, being able to prove it in a easy way and an enforceable way, that's the real challenge here.
Yeah. Look, this article says it remains unclear how age assurance technology would work in Australia, given that I don't think it's happened anywhere yet. Nobody's got this. The federal government yet to reveal results from its $6.5 million technology trial. Are you aware of that?
I knew it was something was happening, but $6.5 million, geez, that's a lot of money to spend on that. But
it is
going to be a tough one because, as I said, we've had the internet for 30 years in Australia, and there's no way that the government hasn't, they've put in certain internet service providers have blocked access to certain sites, but it's like 0.1% of those are blocked, and people can still get through and find wherever they want on the internet. So if they haven't been able to do that in 30 years, what makes people think they're going to be able to prove your age for social media in the next 2 years.
Yeah, well, and the other aspect is they haven't worked out what age will be the limit, whether it's 14, 15, 16. It's
exactly right. That's going to be the biggest debate, mate, apart from the technology. Like, how long's a piece of string? Like, who decides what's the right and wrong age? Like, it's like a parent. One parent decides their child can have a phone when they're 10. Another parent decides, they prefer to have their child have a phone when they're 12 or 13. So who's right, who's wrong?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Always good to talk to you, mate. Have a great week. We'll catch up next Tuesday.
Good on you, Richard. Thanks, mate.
Thank you. Stephen Fenwick, our IT and gadget guru. He has a great website, techguide.com.au.